All right, we're continuing in our study of 2 Samuel. And one of the things I wanted to show you, I've been telling you that Saul reigned over a kingdom of 6,000 square miles. Now, there is David's kingdom, 60,000 square miles. And it's interesting to me on this map that, right here. This yellow area is the area David conquered. So look at all this, all the way down to the Ezion Geber, really. All that. And then Solomon controlled this area. The Israelites didn't live in that area, but Solomon controlled it all the way to the Euphrates River. Isn't that something? That's amazing to me. So that's the difference. But we'll leave it on this map at this time. Okay. So, let's just review real quickly. Abner had gone to David to make peace with him, to make to accept him. And the thing is, did Abner already know that David was supposed to be king? Right? Yeah, he knew that. And he hadn't done anything. Hadn't done anything about it. But now Abner has decided. And my feeling is that Abner knew that it was as soon as going to be all she wrote. Ishbosheth was not going to be a long-term somebody. So I think that Abner was wanting to throw in his lot with David. Whether that would have worked or not, I have my doubts. But anyway, so Abner had business with Joab, and I read some in this real good commentary, and I read in the commentary about how the gates were. Of old, like in Hebron, the gate was a wide gate, a thick gate, so there was plenty of room to take him aside. So I read that, and I like that. And so then we have David bewailing the passing of Abner and saying, "Know that there is a prince and a great man fallen this day in Israel. And I am this day weak, though anointed king, and these men, the sons of Zeruiah, are too hard for me." Now, they were the nephews. They were the nephews of David, and I think that is one of the things that caused a problem, because he had to treat them like kin people, rather than if he had just treated them as one of the boys or something like that. But anyway, and the thing about David, I think about, you know, how would you like to have your life written and everything that you've done described? Would there be anything you would rather just not have dealt with? Of course, David would have had to. So we have David doing some things that are not right, but he devoted his life to God. And that's the thing about it. When we devote our life to God, and we're faithful to God throughout our lives, then God is going to, when we pray and accept forgiveness and so on, he's going to accept us. And it's encouraging to me to see such a man as David that was acceptable with God. He was a man after God's own heart. And yet God was willing to accept some things that were not right. Not to tolerate them, because he dealt with them, every one of them. But sometimes I think about David, and I say, well, he did some things wrong. Well, I have too. And I would hate to have my life set forth in a book, and there would be things about me. Therefore, I have sympathy for David. I understand. All right, so in chapter 4, we have the story of the death of Ishbosheth. And in chapter 4, verse 1, I think Scott read that, and I had him read it, and I think he had Ishbosheth, but it was in italics. And so it is in italics. So he heard that Abner was dead in Hebron, and he just felt like, man, what can I do now? He felt like his strength was gone, because Abner was his strength. Now Abner was gone. So he was troubled, and all Israel was troubled also. Now Ishbosheth, and again, let me ask you something in verse 2, Mike. Look in verse 2. Do you have Ishbosheth there in italics? Do you? Oh, okay. All right. So that's the way it's done. Saul's son. That's exactly right. Saul's son. So in the American Standard, we can leave out what the italics, and it'll say, and Saul's son had two men, just like your reading is there. So the name of the one was Baanah, and the other was Rechab. Rechab. Let me see. Baanah and Rechab. And they were the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite of the children of Benjamin. For Beeroth also was reckoned to Benjamin. And the Beerothites fled to Gittaim and have been sojourners there until this day. So it was a later note. Now, also, we read about Jonathan, Saul's son. He had a son that was born that was lame, because when the news came about Saul's death in verse 4, 5 years old when the tidings of Saul came, Saul and Jonathan came out of Jezreel. So that's when they were killed. That's when they were killed. So at that time, I mean, everything was up in the air, and so the nurse didn't know what was going to happen, so she grabbed this child up to carry him out, and as she went, she stumbled and fell and injured the little boy. And so he fell and became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. Now, in 1 Chronicles chapter 8, in verse 34 and 9 in verse 40, it's Meribbaal. Now, do you remember that what was Gideon's name? What was Gideon's name? Jerubbaal. And he was named Baal because he was called Baal the Baal killer. I don't think that Jonathan would have named his son any name that would have honored Baal. So I think that what it means here is like the Baal killer. Some name like that. So those sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, Rechab and Baanah, went and came about the heat of the day to the house of Ishbosheth as he took his rest at noon. Now they were there under false pretenses. They had other business that they were going to do, because they were going to murder. They were going to assassinate Ishbosheth. So they came in about the heat of the day, and they came in as if they were going to get some wheat, and they smote him in the body. And in verse 6, Baanah and Rechab, his brother, escaped. Now, in verse 7, my other mic, how about reading verse 7 there?
When they came into the house,
he was lying on his bed in his bedroom. Seems to be something about these folks that they like to behead. The Muslims, and they like to behead somebody. So they went in there and smote him and beheaded him. Now, can you think about another reason why they would behead somebody? Proof. That's right. That's right. So instead of bringing his face, they just take the head. So they're going down the Jordan River there, And they're heading down to where David is. All right, so David is in Hebron, and so they're going from Mahanaim. They come over here and go down to Hebron. So that's the way they go, from over here and down here. So they have the idea that I don't think there's any doubt that they thought they would be rewarded. They would be rewarded. But look at the word. Look at the way the way they said this. Mike, go ahead and read verse 8. Now you can almost see that they were thinking, oh, thank you. Thank you for doing that. I am going to reward you men greatly. They thought that would be the case there. But he said, as Jehovah liveth, who hath redeemed my soul out of all adversity. When one told me, saying, behold, Saul is dead, thinking to have brought good tidings, I took hold of him and slew him in Ziklag, which was the reward I gave him for his tidings. How much more, when wicked men have slain a righteous person in his own house, upon his bed, shall I not now require his blood of your hand and take you away from the earth? So David commanded his young men, and they slew them and cut off their hands and their feet. Now, what would be a kind of an idea of why they would have cut off their hands and their feet? Because they'd used their hands and their feet to do what? To behead Ishbosheth. So they had done that. They cut off their hands and their feet, hanged them up beside the pool in Hebron, and they took the head of Ishbosheth. Kind of like this. They took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it in the grave of Abner. So, that's interesting. The grave of Abner. How Abner felt about that, we have no idea. Now, in chapter 5, see things continue to move along. All the tribes came to Israel, to David, to Hebron. See, they're still in the southern part of the land over there. So they're in the southern part of the land. So they come to him and they said, we are your bones and your flesh. In time past, when Saul was king over us, it was you who led and brought in Israel. And the Lord said to you, do they know this? They already know this. You shall be shepherd of my people Israel, and you shall be prince over Israel. That was widely known. And the thing is, we can understand that, grasp that. It was widely known. And yet, there were those that held out, and they didn't want to accept David. So now, all of the princes of Israel have come to David. All the elders of Israel have come to Hebron and the king, and they... David made a covenant with him in Hebron before Jehovah. And they anointed David king over Israel. Now, notice this. You want to read a little bit, Earl? All right. Read in verse 5, chapter 5 and verse 4. And go ahead and read the next one, too. So, can you figure out how old David was when he died? 70. What amazes me is I've already beat that. Isn't that something? You don't think of yourself being older than David. Well, I am. So it's interesting to me. So, but a 70-year reign. Now, apparently, we don't really know exactly how old Solomon was when he died, but Solomon didn't live that long. He didn't reign that much, so that's interesting to me. All right, so the next story is beginning in verse 6, 6 through 10. All right, Jeff, you want to read that? Read 6 through 10. All right, I like the way your text words it. He took the stronghold of Zion. I was thinking about, I don't think I'll do it at this time. Read that part again, verses 8 and 9. All right, now in verse 6, the Jebusites had said, and read that part, verse 6. All right, now that I think that is the accurate translation. So David said, well, we'll see about that. And so he does take it. And so the saying then came up, let the blind and the lame cannot, they're hated of David's soul. So it's not literally the lame and the blind, though, but those who were going to repel him. That's the idea. Those who were going to repel him, they are the ones. And it doesn't name him here. But Joab, let me see. I got something here that I think I'd like to read. Oh, yeah. Another thing or two. In chapter 4, verses 1 through 12. Yeah. Yeah. It's in chapter 4. Verse 4. Jonathan's son, now Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son that was lame in his feet. He was 5 years old when the tidings came out of Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel. So I make the point here in the book that it had been about 2 years since Saul had died. So I think that's an interesting point. All right. Then another note I want to read to you. Okay. In the book here, 1 Chronicles 12 tells the mighty men of valor and wisdom who were part of this group who came to ask David to become king over all Israel. a very large group came, one that could draw up in battle formation. These men came with a perfect heart to make their request to David. They were representative of all the people of the land who wholeheartedly wanted him to be their king. For 3 days, the company of men were in Hebron with David, negotiating and eating together, for their kinsmen had sent food prepared for them. Other Israelites who lived together for their kinsmen, other Israelites who lived near, brought vast quantities of food for the company to share. It was a time of great joy in Israel, and David made an agreement with them and became ruler over all Israel. All right. I want to read another note here regarding the making of the Jebusite city. All right. So on page 54, as David and his army approached the city, the Jebusites taunted them. That's exactly what they did. They taunted them. Oh, you can't take this city. We're impregnable. You can't take this city. Even the blind and the lame can defend these walls against you. So David told his men to go up through the watercourse and smite those who were blind and lame. Not literally blind and lame people, but the Jebusite guards who had flung down their insults. That was the idea. So David promised that the one who got inside the city first would be captain of his host. From that time forward, Joab was the one who succeeded in getting in first. So David kept his promise, and Joab became his chief captain. So that's how he did it. And let me see. Let me read another. On page 55, the Bible does not tell the details of the conquest of Jerusalem, but archaeology has some very interesting facts to add. The city was built on a mountain ridge, and one of the things I had contemplated, and I will show you that, but not today. But in the spring, in the days of David, the spring Gihon flowed out of a cave down in the valley. It flowed out of a cave in the outside the city wall. The Jebusites had dug a tunnel from inside their city to a point where they could drop a vertical shaft into the cave where the spring was. And this, they would walk down their tunnel to the shaft, lower their vessels to the water, and pull them back up full. This seems to have been the water course. Although there is some doubt about that, but this seems to have been the water course David was talking about when he told his men to go in to conquer the city. David's men, with Joab leading them, made their way up this shaft, likely at night, to the inside of the city. From there, they could easily unlock the city gates to let in the soldiers. Many years later, a king named Hezekiah sealed the outside opening where it flowed out. He sealed that off so the Assyrians could not use the water that flowed out that cave. He just sealed it off. So a king named Hezekiah sealed the outside opening of the cave to keep the enemy army from using the water. He dug another tunnel to divert the water to a pool inside the city called the Pool of Siloam. In other words, the Pool of Siloam was not the tunnel, but a tunnel led to the Pool of Siloam. Into a pool inside the city called the Pool of Siloam in New Testament days, John 9 and verse 7. And the tunnel still exists today, and you can go through it. However, I didn't choose to go through it. I wish I could have, but I felt like it would be better for me not to do that. Now, my friend Leon, that was before he was injured, he went through it. He went through that tunnel. So I kind of envy him of doing that. Travelers can visit the tunnel and see the old Jebusite shaft and the later tunnel of Hezekiah. That's very, very interesting. All right, the original city of Jerusalem that David conquered was small in comparison to its later size. David enlarged it and fortified it and called it the City of David. His son Solomon greatly enlarged the city when he built the temple and his palace next to it. The temple was another mountain peak. In other words, the temple was on another mountain peak, the Hill of Moriah. And so Solomon greatly enlarged the city when he built the temple and his palace next to it. The temple was on another mountain peak outside the walls of the original city of David. The city reached the peak of its glory under Solomon, at least so far as its wealth was concerned. So that's the idea there. All right, so Israel, all Israel comes now to David to make him king. And that word Millo, you see that? M-I-L-L-O? Millo probably, well, it would describe an area of stones that were stacked and stacked and stacked and stacked. And probably that's the kind of thing that Millo refers to. It's referred to as a city more than once. So David waxed greater and greater. All right, another thing here. I want to read Psalm 30. Robert, can you read Psalm 30 for me? Just take your time and read Psalm 30. And by the way, while you're turning, Psalm 30 is entitled A Song at the Dedication of the House, a Psalm of David. This house could not be the temple, since it was built by Solomon, not David. But almost certainly this psalm was written to commemorate the dedication of David's own house. So read it if you will. Psalm 30. All right, good. Thank you. That's a beautiful reading. That's my impression every time I read any of the Psalms. I think they're beautiful. So the house was built, and apparently this psalm was written in connection with the establishment of the house of David. And in verse 11, chapter 5 and verse 11, Hiram, king of Tyre, sent messengers to David and cedar trees and carpenters and masons, and they built David a house. Now, this is not the temple. Understand, it's not the temple. But who is associated with David in this endeavor? Hiram. Man, he was a kind of a big guy, an important guy from King of Tyre, and he sent messengers David and cedar trees and carpenters and masons and stone masons and so on. They built David a house. Now, in verse 12, what did David perceive? Curtis, can you read that? 11. 11, 12. Now, isn't that something David perceived? See that? How did David get that idea? From circumstances. Obviously, God had blessed him greatly. So David perceived that Jehovah had established him king over Israel and had exalted his kingdom for his people Israel's sake. Oh, well. Now, 13. Jeff, how about reading 13 and 13 through 16? So had David kind of begun to multiply wives? Yes. One of the things that Deuteronomy 17 mentioned was not to multiply wives. The idea was that, of course, being a leader, he would have some wives. But I just think that it was overdone sometimes. So David took him more concubines and wives out of Jerusalem after he was come out of Hebron. So all the wives that, all the children he had while he was in Hebron, these are additional names. And if you look in verse 14, these were the names that were born unto him in Jerusalem, Shammua and Shobab and Nathan. Nathan and Solomon. Nathan is in Luke 3. As the ancestor, and Solomon is in Matthew 1. So Nathan was an ancestor, part of the seed. So Nathan is one of the names that we have here. So Nathan and Solomon, I think it's interesting. Those are the two names that we have in Matthew and Luke. So anyway. All right, so in verse 17 now, when the Philistines heard that they had anointed David king over Israel, all the Philistines went up to seek David. They went up to do what? To seek David? What were they wanting with him? Kill him. That's exactly right. Yeah, that's right. They were wanting to kill David. So they went up to seek David, and David heard of it and went to the stronghold. Now, I don't think this was... Sometimes the name stronghold is referred to like in chapter 5, and you take 6, 7, like in verse 7, what is referred to there? The stronghold of what? Of Zion. I don't think this stronghold is the same thing. In verse 17. David heard of it and went to the stronghold. Well, he was already in the stronghold. So I don't think that's what it's talking about. So some other stronghold that he had used as a fort. So the Philistines came and spread themselves in the valley of Rephaim. And David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go up against the Philistines?" You notice how David would inquire of the Lord. Lord, do you want me to do this? So, do you want me to go? Shall I inquire? I mean, shall I go up against the Philistines? Will you deliver them into my hand? And the Lord said to David, "Go up, for I will certainly deliver the Philistines into thy hand." So David came to Baal-perazim, And he smote them there and said, The Lord hath broken mine enemies before me like the breach of waters. Therefore he called the name of the place Baal Perazim. And there, and they left their images there. Now, let me see. Someone else read how your verse. Judd, how about reading in verse 21.
And they abandoned their idols there, but David and his men carried them away.
All right, so they abandoned their idols there. So the American standards, their images, which is the same thing. Now, the footnote here says, and that is the place of breaking forth. The place of breaking forth. So that has to do with the idols. So that's the note again. In 22, yet the Philistines came up again and spread themselves in the valley of Rephaim, a valley near Jerusalem. And when David inquired of the Lord, he said, Thou shalt not go up. Instead, what did he say do? That's right. Circle around them, over against the mulberry trees or the balsam trees. And it shall be when thou hearest the sound of marching in the tops of the mulberry trees, you will bestir yourself, for then is Jehovah gone out before thee to smite the host of the Philistines. So that was the idea. What was he to wait on? Till he heard the sound of marching in the mulberry, in the tops of the mulberry trees. Then you will bestir yourself, because then the Lord is gone out before you. So David went out, and he smote the Philistines from Geba. And probably, do you have another reading there from Geba? All right. Do you have Geba? All right, Geba. All right. And in some translations, like in 1 Chronicles 14:16, it's Gibeon. So that's a possibility. Until you come to Gezer. And my friend Leon says that a Gezer is an old guy. So this is, he calls it Gezer. Well, all right, Gezer. All right, Leon. Yes, Gezer. All right, so now we have some things kind of crammed together here. Because what is David going to do now? In verse 6, chapter 1, chapter 6, verses 1 through 5. All right, let's see somebody else. You want to read that?
Now David again gathered all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000, and David arose and went with all the people who were with him to Baal Judah to bring up from there the ark of God, which was called by the name, the very name of the Lord of hosts, who was enthroned above the cherubim. And they placed the ark of God on a new cart, that they might bring it from the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill, and Uzzah and Ahio and the sons of Abinadab were leading the new cart. So they brought it with the ark of God from the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill, and Ahio was walking ahead of the ark. Meanwhile, David and all the house of Israel were celebrating before the Lord with all kinds of instruments made of burl wood and with lyre, harp, tambourine, castanets, and cymbals.
All right. Now, look at the idea. You had the word, and the American Standard has it too, Baal Judah, but that is the same thing as Kiriath Jearim. That's another name for it, Kiriath Jearim. So that's another name for it. So they were going to bring up the Ark of God, and how were they going to carry this ark? On a cart. Is that the way the law said that ark ought to be carried? How did the law say it ought to be carried? On the shoulders of the priest. Remember that. Okay, we'll stop at this point.